Inside the Cross Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, joined again by Josh Davey. We are here in IL's podcast studio where we're having a few lighting issues. We got some mood lighting on in here. It's nice and comfy and cozy. And we're on deadline day here at Inside Lacrosse. So everyone's a little bit on edge, but we're excited to take some time out and record this podcast today. Josh, how you feeling?
I'm glad to be back in the podcast room. Like you said, I feel like we should be talking about, you know, something a little more romantic than Division III lacrosse, but you know, we'll see what we got today.
Excellent, I love it. Speaking of Division III lacrosse and loving it, Stevens, how about them knocking off Ithaca this weekend? And Coach Gene Peluso getting the big win. Ithaca dropping two in a row, and you know, really, it's two games where Ithaca seemed to be in charge and fell late in the game. You know, you got to be concerned if you're Coach Long about ability to close out games. You know, I was kind of prepared heading into last week about writing the story that, you know, this is Coach Long's best chance at winning a national championship. You know, I know this is a team that's been rolling through opponents, and they've kind of been happy not having the spotlight, doing their own thing, you know, racking up wins without a lot of attention. And you know, the past week was just not good to them. You know, I still think that they are a legit contender, but they got to show out some ability to close out games. You know, they lost to Cortland in the midweek tilt last week, and then also lost to Stevens. And you know, what sticks out to me about Gene Peluso's squad is just a well-coached game plan. Junior Tommy Dawson, he had the overtime game-winning goal. He had a hat trick and an assist, and it was a 5-goal turnaround. You know, Stevens was down 10-6 with 11 minutes to play. The 10-man ride, it can be great for you, but it can kill you. And it looked like in this case for Ithaca, you know, they run this 10-man ride, and Stevens was just really well prepared for it. You know, coach practiced it all week in practice, and they had a defenseman, Daniel Crotty, made a shot on the 10-man ride, and just a well-coached, well-earned win for Ithaca. And I'm sorry, for Stevens. And Josh, like you mentioned, this is still a young team over at Stevens.
Yeah, they're a young team, and like you said, Coach Peluso is one of the better coaches in the game, been around for a little while. You know, what's interesting about the 10-man ride is it's tough to do it against. You know, athleticism is really what beats a 10-man ride. Remember, the goal of a 10-man ride is kind of trap you in corners. So, you know, when you're clearing the ball, you want to try to keep the ball in the middle of the field, and I think Stevens just has some of those athletic middies, you know, who and they're, like I said, a well-coached team and are smart enough to break in and disciplined enough. You have to be really patient within that. And I think also, you know, I wasn't there, but Stevens is one of the coolest places in Division III lacrosse to play, up in Hoboken. It's kind of on top of a building, on top of a hill. You have a pretty cool view of like the city, you know, over the bridge and whatnot. So one of the coolest environments to play in. And yeah, I think, you know, with Ithaca, you know, having this little two-game skid, they were up 7-1 against Cortland, you know, blow that one up against 10-6 to Stevens in this game in the fourth quarter, and let us slip through their fingers. So, you know, it might just be a little mid-season crisis for Ithaca, but like you said, I think they're certainly a team you have to consider moving forward. You know, teams are going to go through these little lulls, and nothing to take away, nothing against Stevens. They're, a very well-coached team, and have been a good team for a long time now. So, you know, lived another day for Stevens and Ithaca. You know, they'll figure it out and right the ship. But similar theme going on every week. You know, it's a lot of parity. Anyone can take anyone down. So good for the sport.
You said about how it's one of the best places to watch a game. More than 500 people at that game. You know, just from what I've heard, the crowd went into a bit of a frenzy after that game winning goal. So congrats to Stevens. And you know, like you said, that they're still a young team, and they were able to make this comeback win, which shows a lot of character, especially for a young team. This week on the podcast, I talk with Cortland coach Steve Bevel. His interview is going to come up next. And, you know, he kind of credits Cortland's ability to come back against Ithaca last week with the veteran leadership that they have on this group. You know, Cortland is a team that has a lot of veterans. They have a lot of guys who have won a lot of games. You know, Cortland consistently is winning, you know, 16 games in a season. And so it's interesting just to see that kind of dichotomy that you can do it with youth, but you can do it with veterans as well. You know, I really enjoyed interviewing Coach Bevel, and they have a big one tonight. You know, we're recording this Wednesday morning. Tonight they play RIT, 7 o'clock. Big North matchup. As we've said on this podcast for I think the past 3 weeks now, the North is just really there's so many good teams in the North, and you know, a few of them are undefeated. You got Bates, you got Tufts still, you got a team like RIT that had its, you know, two game skid. Maybe Ithaca's going to be in the same boat as them, where a two game skid, but then they come back and turn it around. And then you've got Cortland that's 8-0 right now. And one of the things that Coach Bevel and I talked about was the influence of him coaching the Iroquois Nationals team. You know, he was the coach there in 2014, an Iroquois team that won the bronze medal. And he mentioned how it kind of helped him loosen the reins a little bit on his program, give the guys a little bit more freedom. And I think you're starting to see that with the team. It's a team that, you know, Coach Bevel's a little bit buttoned up. He's, you know, he kind of controls things a little bit. And he admits that, and he's fine with that. It's still his style of coaching. But just the ability to kind of let the guys play a little bit, I think, has led to a little bit of this success this season. And they're a really fun team to watch. I'm really looking forward to this game tonight.
And I think that if you look across some of the top teams in Division III, you know, across the board, that kind of free style where you kind of, you know, it's like kind of do, you know, act first, ask questions later, is kind of the theme for a lot of those top teams. You know, RIT plays that way. Stevenson plays that way. I think Salisbury plays that way to an extent. I think they're a lot smarter and a little more disciplined than pretty much every other team in the country with Coach Berkman at the helm. But I think that's, you know, a theme across. And you know, for some of the other schools out there who are, you know, kind of sticking to their, I don't know what you want to call it, but they're, you know, they're doing what they've traditionally done. I think that this is certainly a movement that's, you know, across the board, D1, D2, or 3, that's taken over. And I think it's a lot more fun, too. And I think when the guys in the team are having a lot more fun, you know, they want to work that much harder and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, tonight should be a fantastic game.
You know, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. You know, I asked Coach Bevel what he thought was going to be the over-under on this game. You know, what he thought would be the final score line. And he made a good point. Like he said, I have no idea. There's absolutely no idea what could happen in this game. You know, I think it can go a number of ways. RIT is just so deadly in transition. I think Cortland has the ability, though, to kind of stifle their transition and kind of slow them down. You know, like we were just saying, they're such a smart, well-coached team that I think that sometimes they can take advantage of RIT's, you know, plan to kind of get many goals in transition. You know, there's ways that you can kind of control that and prevent that. You know, so if they get into that kind of game, you know, maybe they can win a 9-8 game. But then also, if RIT starts scoring, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Cortland could win a 16-15 game, or, you know, RIT could win 16-15 or 9-8. You know, really, there's kind of a number of scenarios in this game, and I think that's just what makes it fun.
Yeah, and I think when you look at RIT's roster, you know, I think Dan Abern and Kyle Devitt alluded to this in the Division I podcast about, you know, who you're going to lock off on, you know, Virginia, and who you're going to try to shut down, trying to shut down Sergio Salcedo and Nick Mariano. And it's like, well, yeah, that's all well, you can say that, but that's a lot harder, you know, harder to actually accomplish. And with Ryan Lee, Chad Levick, Brayden Wallace kind of being the leaders on that offense, three seniors for RIT, you know, you kind of speaks to that dichotomy you mentioned earlier about having a very senior-laden team. And again, you know, these guys are going to come out, they're going to play. It's a Wednesday night, and that's what's so cool about Division III lacrosse is you get a chance every opportunity, Wednesday, you know, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. I mean, you're like a professional lacrosse player. It's such a cool thing. And it's great for us because we have something to talk about every Wednesday, you know, talking about tonight's game and then looking forward to Saturday a little bit as well. So, yeah, really, really excited for this one. I've had to pick one. I would say RIT comes out ahead by, you know, maybe four is what I would guess. But I think it's going to be a great game.
Interesting. I think it's going to play out similar to how Dickinson RIT went at the Mustang Classic. Dickinson won that one 10-9. I could see a similar scoreline in this one with Cortland coming ahead. And fun night in upstate tonight. You know, you have this game and then the longtime rivalry Hobart versus Syracuse is also going on tonight up in D1. So be a fun night to be an upstater, as it always is. You know, once you get out of the February-March season, it's fun to be upstate with all the lacrosse that's played on any given night. But moving back down to this region, I want to talk a little bit about our May issue of Inside Lacrosse. We're sending it to press today. Like I said, it's always stressful getting the deadline, but I'm particularly proud of this issue that we have coming out. We have a D3 story in there about York College. York is a place that I lived at for 3 years right out of college. You know, I graduated from the University of Maryland, took a job at the newspaper in York, Pennsylvania, and lived there for a few years before I came back here to Inside Lacrosse. And it's really been fun to watch this program kind of rise to where they are right now. Last year, beating Salisbury, winning the CAC Conference Championship, and now they're up to number three in the country, number three in the latest USILA Nike Division III coaches poll.
Who's their one loss to again?
Oh, you're going to go there?
Had to.
Well, it's interesting. Their one loss is to Lynchburg, a crazy game, multiple overtimes. You know, one of those character losses, if that makes any sense.
For sure, no doubt.
You know, it's a loss that you don't particularly want to have a loss, but it's one that you don't mind having on your schedule. And Coach Kadelka's fingerprints are all over this York program. You know, Brandon Childs really admires Coach Kadelka. Coach Kadelka was his coach at Lynchburg, and then he was an assistant for Kadelka. And moved on to Dickinson, where he coached under Dave Webster. And the way that Childs kind of described himself is somewhere in between the two of them. You know, he's kind of got the intensity of Coach Kadelka in some ways, and he's got the ability to communicate that Coach Webster brought to the table. And, you know, those are really two great mentors to have if you're going to be a Division III lacrosse coach.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, when I look, just, you know, not to get too personal about it, but those are the last two schools I was looking at when I was getting recruited, were Dickinson and Lynchburg. And you're right, they're two different kind of styles in Dickinson and Lynchburg. And what Coach Childs has been able to accomplish, you know, in his short time there is nothing short of amazing. I mean, he's an extremely personable guy, a very family first kind of guy. And, you know, he's kind of got his guys there now. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Lynchburg roots. Is his assistant coach, Eric Lombardo, is a first team All-American 2015 grad. One of his other assistants played at Lynchburg for a year. Dan Kaplan, and then graduated from York, ended up being one of York's better midfielders towards the end of his tenure there. So, you know, like you said, with Coach Kadelka's fingerprints all over. But Coach Child is an awesome coach and an awesome guy, one of the great ambassadors for our sport, and I'm really happy for him to see that program, you know, taking the steps that it's taking, you know, with about four or five more games left on the calendar. You know, Salisbury kind of the one that's probably circled for those guys. You know, don't want to sleep on Wesley or Southern Virginia or Christopher Newport by any means, but, you know, that's kind of the big one on their calendar, and, you know, really excited for them. I think that they're a young team. Brendan McGrath is a sophomore who has to be in the player of the year contention right now with 53 points, 36 goals, 17 assists. They're a team, you know, that's led by five or six sophomores in the scoring. I don't think they have a senior until, you know, maybe their 10th leading point scorer or so. So I think this is a team that we'll see, you know, whether it's Boston or Philly or Baltimore, wherever the Final Four is for championship weekend for Division III, I think that we will see the Spartans there in the next few years for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, part of the reason for the story is, you know, there's teams who have a year of success all the time. I'm not going to say it's easy to do that, but teams can have a year of success and then fall off the map again, and then, you know, you forget about them in a few years. You don't feel like it's that way with York. You know, this is a really young team, and, you know, the way that people have kind of talked about York College with me is it's this sleeping giant in Division III lacrosse. Relatively speaking, it's pretty affordable. You know, it's kind of that good mid-sized university. It's just, you know, 45 minutes to an hour away from Baltimore. You know, basically York County, Pennsylvania, is the county right above Baltimore County in Maryland. So that means it's also close to Philly. It's close to a lot of the central Pennsylvania talent, you know, New Jersey talent. Lots of reasons why York should be very good at lacrosse, and Brandon Childs is kind of doing the things to bring it from a very good program to a great program. And, you know, a lot of the things that it took to do that were things just like, you know, implementing a strength and conditioning program. You know, they didn't really have a very detailed plan for stuff like that before he got there. The scouting reports is something that, you know, I'm sure Coach Kadelka was very good about his scouting reports, but, you know, Coach Childs really has implemented more detailed scouting reports and film study. And the way he looks at each week, you know, when I went up to York for the story to do the reporting for it, I watched a practice. I interviewed Coach Childs in his office. And he's very task oriented. You know, he's very intense, but not really outwardly so intense. You know, he's a very personable, nice, kind of quiet guy. But, you know, there's an intensity underneath there that you kind of get when you're talking to him. He's always looking for the next, what's the next thing he can accomplish? What's the next thing he can check off of his list? You know, when they beat Stevenson at the Mustang Classic, he had a quote ready for his team when they got to the locker room about 12:30 that night, next morning. Basically, that said, if you're talking about what you did yesterday, you're not doing anything important today, something along those lines. So he's very goal-oriented, very task-oriented, and that's kind of what has led to some of the success. But, you know, you mentioned family first, and that's a key part to this story, too. You know, I'm really excited to kind of share the story about him and his family and how much his family means to him. And you know, Coach Webster and Coach Gadelka both said that they've seen him as he, you know, his daughter, and then he has two sons as well. As his family has kind of grown, it's made him a better coach. You know, he's gotten more perspective on things. And, you know, that's really helped him in his coaching career as well. So really excited to share that story with everybody. And I hope everyone reads it in the May issue of Inside the Cross. And, you know, we'll see what York does from here.
Yeah, I'm excited for him. I think, like I said, Coach Kyle is an awesome guy, great ambassador for the sport. You know, if I don't have my Lynchburg cap on, I'll have my York cap on. So I'm excited for him. And you're right, his family is he's got a great family. Yeah, just really excited for him and that program moving forward. I think we're going to be talking about them on a lot of Wednesday podcasts for the next year or so. So looking forward to it.
Excellent, Josh. Now I want to take a quick look at D2 this week. And, you know, it's kind of how we just said that in D3, it's a little bit of the same that we've had the past few weeks. You know, kind of wondering who is that team in the North when there's all these powers in the North. The same storyline that we talked about 2 weeks ago with Division II is repeating itself, and that's the Northeast 10 Conference being so fun to watch and being so interesting and kind of up in the air. It's for so long, it's been Lemoyne and then a gap, and then there's this Merrimack Adelphi group, and then it falls off a cliff from there. You don't have that this year. You know, Lemoyne just suffered a loss to Southern New Hampshire, 2 weeks ago. This week, Adelphi just beat Merrimack. This was supposed to be a, you know, I'm doing air quotes, down year for Adelphi, and they just beat Merrimack, which started out the year as the number two team in the country, lost in overtime to Lemoyne just a few weeks ago. So really, it's just one of these, it's so up in the air in the NE10, and I'm really curious who is going to be, you know, the representatives to the NCAA tournament from the North region in Division II lacrosse. Adelphi is a team that really interests me right now. The big reason is they had a lot of new faces on this team, and I'm extremely impressed with Gordon Purdy's ability to kind of blend these new faces into his program, and kind of, he does it every year where he gets a lot of transfers. They get a lot of, you know, guys who left Long Island and came back to Long Island and want to play on the team and somehow fit right in with this group. So Coach Purdy's doing something really special there. Ian Kirby is their leading point scorer. He was an Under Armour All-American. He went to Towson University, transferred into Adelphi this year. He's I believe he's a junior eligibility-wise, but he's a Massapequa kid. He played under Kevin Sheehan, who was Gordon Purdy's coach back in the day. So, you know, and they play kind of the same offense. You know, Kevin Sheehan and Gordon Purdy, those coaches kind of work hand in hand, and they still do. So he's able to fit right in. He's the leading point scorer for this team. You know, they've got a new faceoff guy who's winning at a great clip right now. They've got a sophomore goaltender who's saving 61%. So I'm really impressed by Gordon Purdy and Adelphi's ability to take some new faces, bring them in. Some guys who maybe didn't have a lot of minutes last year step up. You know, they lost an extremely talented player last year. So it's really interesting to see how they're getting scoring and they're getting production from a number of guys, not just a guy named Sal Tuttle like they did last year. So I'm really interested in the D2 North, who's going to be the representatives come NCAA tournament time. I would not be surprised if it's, you know, three teams from the Northeast 10 that get into the tournament. And I mean, it just shows once again the need for expansion at the Division II level in terms of the NCAA tournament field, because one of these teams might get left out depending on how things shake up in the conference tournament. And that would be a travesty if either Lemoyne, Merrimack, or Adelphi was not in the NCAA tournament this year because of the NCAA tournament field being so limiting in D2.
Yeah, I'm looking at the, you know, the top kind of 12, 15 right now for Division II. And, you know, forgive me, I'm not as familiar with the D2 landscape as you are, Matt. But, you know, you got Limestone at number one. And then you really don't have a team from the south until you get to 7 at Lenoir Rhine. Which I know is an up-and-coming program down in North Carolina. And then Lindenwood, I don't know where they would fall in terms of, you know, a north or south kind of seating being out towards, in, I think they're in St. Louis, correct? Out there somewhere. I know we've seen them at some events that we've run before. And then you kind of have Tampa at 12. So you really only have three teams that are really kind of outside of that, above the Mason-Dixon line, who are kind of in that top 15, even if you go below. Mount Olive, Belmont Abbey, I guess is southern, but southern New Hampshire. So I'm excited to see, you know, in the south at least, you know, Tampa is a place I'm a little more familiar with Coach Burdick down there, and he's been able to do a gorgeous, obviously, down there in Tampa, Florida. And then Lindenwood, I think is what's so cool about lacrosse in general is, like, you have a place in Lindenwood in St. Louis, Missouri, I'm pretty sure, that's number 9th in the country. I mean, that's pretty cool to me. So just excited for D2 to expand. I think it's an area that needs some more light shined on it. So I'm excited that we can do that here. But you're right. And, you know, it might not happen until, you know, there's a little more opportunity for the NCAA field to expand. And I think Division II is a great option for a lot of players. And I think you do see a lot of transfers, like you had talked about, from Adelphi and some of these, or from, you know, Towson to Adelphi or some of these places like that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, all these recruits, as early recruiting continues to, you know, kind of be a hot topic, is everyone's not going to love where they go. And it's not always the wrong, you know, it's not always a bad thing. Like, you got to find out what's best for you at the end of the day. Very few of these guys are going to be making, you know, professional careers off of lacrosse, you know, at least on the field. So you want to go to a place where you can fit in. And there are a lot of really great options at the D2 level.
Yeah, and Mercyhurst, number 4 in the country, is technically in the South region in D2.
Gotcha.
And but that's going to change next year as there's some reorganization in D2. So it's just going to get even tougher for these northern teams. Mercyhurst will be a northern team next year, which means that that's just another power in the north that needs to fight for one of these, you know, coveted spots that there's only a few of. And, you know, if it feels like we're talking bad about the South, I don't think that's the case at all. There's a lot of good lacrosse played in the South. And, you know, obviously Limestone is the power down there right now. Lenoir Rhine is having a heck of a season. They're at 9-1. And Lindenwood's another team that's on that Mercyhurst level of fluctuating, you know, north and south, as is Seton Hill. So it's just really interesting. And I think the NCAA tournament, the way that it's structured, has been very good for growing the game in the South, because it's given opportunities for teams in the South to go into the NCAA tournament. I think it's just time for the next step to go allow even more teams from the South and the North to go to the NCAA tournament. There's something I'm going to be working on. It's a preview. I don't want to give away too much, but I have a theory for how the D2 NCAA tournament should be structured that's wildly different from it is right now. So I'm really excited to bring that to you over the next few weeks when I get some time to iron that out. But that's going to be something we talk about for the next few years, as you know, because it's right now the fastest growing segment of the game. And geographically, it's growing.
So diverse.
So yeah, it's so diverse between, you know, now you have inroads in the Midwest and West in the D2 level, and the South has just been such an explosion of growth, you know, over the past decade down there. So it's a really important segment for the game.
I've got a buddy who coaches out of Colorado Mesa, who's ranked 18th right now, and they are good, man. I've seen them play. They're getting some good recruits out there. You know, it's a school I don't know that much about. But, you know, to your point, you know, the top, you know, Tusk, what is it? What's the last kind of four, right? Wingate, St. Anselm, Colorado Mesa, Florida Tech. Florida Tech's another gorgeous school down in, right on the beach down there in Florida. I'm blanking on the name of the town. I know it starts with a B. But, yeah, just a lot of great options, a lot of great lacrosse, and you know, I as a D3 kind of, you know, homer, but obviously, you know, Division I kind of you know, reigns king. I'm excited to see the Division II landscape grow. I think they're doing some things that even at the Division I and III level they can't offer. So excited about it.
Excellent, Josh. We're gonna cut this one short and kind of get to Coach Bevel, our interview with him, and he's got the big tilt against RIT tonight. So everyone, please support these matchups and tune into the live stream, Cortland versus RIT, and get some eyeballs on this game, because you're going to be impressed. Inside Lacrosse here with the Division III podcast, we have Cortland coach Steve Bevel. Coach, right now, your team is sitting at 8-0. You're undefeated. You're number 5 in the Division III coaches poll. How good does it feel in that locker room right now?
Well, I mean, obviously, when you're undefeated, you haven't lost a game. You know, there's a lot of good feeling going around. But, you know, that being said, I think, you know, we've got some older guys, too, who've been through, you know, full seasons and know there's ups and downs through the seasons and know the importance of making sure that we're looking forwards at the next opponent and not, being too happy with ourselves, you know, at the halfway point. So it's a good feeling. And, you know, certainly would rather be 8-0 than 6-2 or even 7-1. But we're making sure that we're focusing on the next opponent.
And that next opponent is a big one with RIT next on the schedule for you guys and a midweek tilt. It's a key North matchup. What do you see out of RIT and what's kind of your game plan heading into this game?
Well, what we see is what we've seen over the past, 7 years. They're extremely dangerous, particularly with the Canadian crew they have playing on attack and a couple of their midfields. They love the transition game. They push the transition game, and, they take anywhere from 45 to 60. So that's a lot. And, they love that game. They love the transition game. So, I mean, going into it, you know, we obviously have to try to limit the touches of their top shooters, of their snipers. And believe me, they have a few of them. They've scored in the past 2 games after a little bit of a lull. They've scored 28 against a pretty solid Middlebury team and 19 against a very good St. Lawrence team. So I think we're just going to have to really be careful about, those transition opportunities, how many times we're giving them, the 43s, the 32s, and any kind of a man-up advantage that they thrive on and take advantage of. So, going into the game, we love to run too. We love to shoot a lot. But I think, we're just going to have to keep an eye on that and really keep an eye on their top dogs.
This team that you're coaching right now, it feels like a very experienced team. A lot of guys who've had some minutes on both ends of the ball. How much does that help you at this kind of juncture in the season where, like you said, you don't want to look backwards, you want to look forwards? How is having those guys who have been through it, have the leadership skills, how is that helping you right now?
Well, it's important. And I think, like I said a couple minutes ago, having some older guys who have been through full seasons, who have played a lot, through a full season, gotten a lot of playing time, the Dave Fosters and Anthony Zangari at the midfield, TJ DeLira, Mike Hart, Nate Bercevoy, Jimmy Nielsen on attack, Devin Phelps, these guys have played, and started in, 17, 18, 19 game seasons. So they know the routine. They know the things that can happen. They know the things that probably will happen, in the course of a season. So I think they've done a good job in their leadership and, talking to the younger guys, keeping them focused. We had a little bit of a lull the other day against Oneonta. Oneonta played fantastic against us and kept the game close and gave them a chance to win at the end. But we pulled that one off, and I attribute us not panicking and a lot of our older guys taking care of business in that game. So very important to have those older guys who have been in these situations.
An overtime win that you guys got 11-10 over Oneonta, and then just a few days prior to that, 12-11 over Ithaca in overtime, a big comeback win for you guys. Ithaca heading into this game seemed like a team that was almost untouchable, the way that they were piling up points in some of their opponents. How did that game unfold for you guys?
Well, honestly, right off the bat, I mean, they're up 6-0. In the first, 12 minutes. And one of them was we received an illegal stick penalty. One of our defensive midfielders had a pocket that was too big, and they scored 3 goals, on that penalty. And very slick sticks, great shooters, great offensive team. They're deep with shooters and slick offensive players. So, they jumped us. And they did everything they could to jump on us to start the game. 7-1 at the end of the first quarter. And we put a few in and made it 7-3, gave us a little bit of a lift. Joe Panarello from Islip gave us a lift with a couple goals. And then, Ithaca scored two more and got themselves a lead going into halftime. I think it was 10-3 at the half. Into the locker room, and no panic and no screaming, but, you know, there were some words in there that, we better get it together. It was going to be a long, long night. Some of the older guys stepped up and had a few good words about controlling the ball on offense, getting after the ground balls, and just digging in on defense. I think that was the biggest thing with our effort that night was after they scored a goal to make it 11-4, our defense really put the clamps on Ithaca. We pushed out a little farther. We didn't let them get free with their hands. Our goalie made some big saves, and of course our offense really started moving the ball and controlling the ball and put pressure on their defense. And I think that was the biggest key was we were able to rest our defense a little bit after that big onslaught in the first half. And our defense did a tremendous job clamping down on the Ithaca shooters in the second half as well. So we feel very fortunate to come out of a victory with that game, especially after being down 11-4 and holding them scoreless for approximately 25 minutes, I think, or so, where they didn't score a goal to end the game. And Nate Bersavoy, one of our older guys, was able to get his hands free and let a howitzer go and beat their goalie down low, and rest is history. So it was a great win. It was a great win. Great hard-fought win.
You look at the Division III North, and I'm sure it's stressful for you and for your peers, but from a fan's perspective, there's so many good teams, and it's not just these top teams. Tufts, Bates, you guys, you got RIT, St. Lawrence, Ithaca, Amherst, so many teams in the North that are good, and going outside the top 20 teams that are so good. You got to feel like any time you play someone in this region, it's going to be a dogfight.
Both regions. Our division has grown so much. I think we're up to about 225 or 230 total teams, and the lacrosse from top to bottom's gotten better. But there's just been a huge bottleneck of great high school players that weren't able to play at the Division I level or weren't able to play at some of the even the higher division traditional higher Division III levels. And that's showing up. There's so many good teams. Like you just said, we go into every game, thinking, hey, these guys have players and they have a lot of players. That's changed even in the past 5 or 6 years. And it's made Division III a lot deeper. I think more teams in the North this year overall that are at the highest level, but there's plenty of really good teams in the South too. And led by obviously Salisbury and York, who's having a tremendous season. Cabrini, we think, is very good as well. But there's a lot of parity. There's no doubt about it. There's parity all through our division. And it's going to be brutal getting through the North, no question about it.
Coach, as someone who's been to the top of the mountain in Division III lacrosse, when you're at this point of your season, what do you want to be seeing from your team, to be prepared to make a deep run in May? What are the things that you want them to be accomplishing right now?
Well, I think, the one thing that I've always stressed is, we continue to work on fundamentals at the beginning of the week and, not so much in our day before the game, but we try to make sure that we're working on our fundamentals. We're working on conditioning. We're still lifting. We're doing all the things we need to do to prepare physically, for the second part of the season. And I think, that's a big part of going on one of these runs is the continued preparation, the continued attention to fundamentals, the attention to taking care of themselves, the attention to the strength training, and just making sure that you're doing all the things you're supposed to do from a fundamental standpoint to stay healthy and make one of these runs.
You mentioned a few of your upperclassmen, your senior leaders already. Who would you say are the handful of guys who are keeping you guys, the team focused, keeping you guys prepared for the next week and doing all those things that you just mentioned?
Well, there's a number of them. I think, you know, off to the forefront, Mike Hart is our kind of our heart and soul. Actually, he's our face-off guy and our top short stick, D. Mitty. He's been a very vocal leader, both on and off the field. Devin Phelps, who's having a tremendous year, has also been a great leader for us. Yeah, I think he's our first or second leading scorer and one of our top attackmen. Tom McEnany, who's a transfer but has taken on a leadership role as a junior, is doing a great job from a leadership perspective. And, you know, we feel like we've got a couple sophomores and actually a couple freshmen that are doing a great job too and taking over the reins as far as, you know, the leadership of their group and the leadership of the underclassmen, learning from the older guys and saying the right things and you know, living it both on and off the field and their preparation and the way that they're doing things and you know, the way that we're going into each game and preparing.
Coach, it sounds like a lot of stuff you're talking about is a lot of the West Genesee things. How much of your coaching career is shaped by what you learned there?
Oh, a lot, you know. You know, having played there and you know, worked during the summers for Coach Messer at the Show Park and at the summer leagues and you know, the basis and the fundamentals of my ideas and my organization and planning and the way that I do things, you know, comes from that. It comes from that program, all the way from, you know, from the JV guys I had and the varsity coaches I had there. And of course, Mike and, you know, just watching him, learning, you know, taking as much as I could from my high school upbringing and of course, all of the, you know, success Mike has had. You know, it wasn't a fluke. Mike prepared. I mean, he was the most prepared coach, you know, that I'd ever seen. And he was scouting and preparing and doing the things that he needed to do to be successful a lot earlier than a lot of high school coaches were putting the time in. And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, is just watching the way that Mike prepared and got us ready, you know, for games, not just scout report, but, you know, the fundamentals, doing things the right way. Preparing, you know, strength training, doing everything that we're supposed to do to execute a game plan. And you know, those things always stick with you. And, you know, that's a huge part of the base and the fundamental style of coaching that I have is based off West Genesee. There's no doubt about it.
We're about 3 years removed now from you coaching the Iroquois Nationals team at the FIL World Championships, bronze medal finish in that event. And I was really curious, it seems like an odd question, but what did you learn from coaching that team and kind of what did you take away from being the coach at that event that you can apply at Cortland and help you out now?
Well, I certainly became more patient. I can tell you that much. That experience was fantastic. I'm sure I'll have more opportunities to work with the Iroquois either sooner rather than later. But it was a tremendous lacrosse experience, coaching the most instinctual lacrosse players on earth. There's just nothing like it to watch the way that these guys just know when to cut, when not to cut, when to shoot, when to pass. You know, the skill level was obviously amazing with, you know, some of the things that Bill Lyle was doing and Randy Statz, Bomberry, you know, the whole gang of those guys are just incredibly instinctual lacrosse players and athletes. And I think that, you know, from a guy who's been a very structured guy, you know, and really buttoned down and had a game plan and, you know, we want to execute the game plan and we want to do things a certain way. I had to back off that a little bit. I had to absolutely give these guys more freedom to do the things that they do, to create and just play the game, you know, instinctually. Something, you know, I think that I've done here a little bit more.
It's certainly a fun team to watch that you guys have.
Oh yeah, the Iroquois experience, you know, was again, you know, was great for me. And I think I've definitely let loose the reins a little bit more than I have in past years. I think that, you know, the basis of my lacrosse coaching early on was what we talked about, was of a fundamental nature and of a planning nature and an execution nature. And, you know, that experience with coaching those guys was a great one for me. And I think it helped me learn and helped me to, you know, give some more chances for freedom and creating opportunities with my guys.
Coach, my last question for you is, again, focusing on this RIT game. You know, I think your team has the ability to win in multiple different ways. You can score. You know, you're putting up a lot of goals this year. You're also winning the close, tight games. What can a fan expect in terms of the score line of this game? Do you kind of expect a high-scoring shootout? Do you expect it to be a little bit buttoned up? For someone who wants to kind of watch the live stream on Wednesday night, what do you expect in that regard, and what favors Cortland?
I have absolutely no idea, because RIT is so manic in their pursuit of the transition game that it could, I'm telling you, it could go either way. We could have an 8-7 game. It wouldn't surprise me. And we could have a 16-15 game. Wouldn't surprise me. So we're just going to be ready to play. You know, we're going to be able to be ready to react to the situations that happen on the field. I know that, you know, no matter what happens, our heads aren't going to go down. If the other team scores, you know, a few goals or goes on a run, lacrosse is a game of runs, always has been and always will be. And a momentum game. So we're going to be ready. We're going to be ready on both sides of the ball. We're going to be prepared. And, you know, I just think it's going to be another classic with the two teams that are playing good lacrosse right now.
I kind of thought you'd say that, you know, expect the unexpected is really the only thing we can look forward to on Wednesday. And it's certainly going to be a fun one from a fan's perspective. Coach, good luck in your final day of preparation, and good luck tomorrow.
Well, thanks very much. Good talking to you today.
Take care.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.